Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloem. In this program, we'll get to listen to the first episode of a new podcast from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena that focuses on the InSight lander mission to Mars. InSight is not a rover. It will land and use instruments to probe the interior of the red planet by doing things like listening for Mars quakes with a sensitive seismometer. The podcast, created by science journalist Leslie Mullen, is called On a Mission. InSight was launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base in Southern California in May and is scheduled to land on Mars November 26th. We'll check out the first episode of On a Mission that focuses on the incredible difficulties of landing a robotic spacecraft successfully on another world. But first, let's talk to the creator of the podcast, Leslie Mullen. She joined us via Skype from JPL in Pasadena. Leslie Mullen, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'd like to start out by just finding a bit about you. Tell us, you're a science journalist, right?
Yes, that's right.
Tell me about what came first, the science or the journalism?
Almost both at the same time. When I was thinking about what to do with my life, I really admired National Geographic. And I thought if I was going to be a journalist, I would want to report on science like National Geographic did.
Ooh, and so was there any specific areas of science that really interested you when you were younger?
No, not really. I wasn't an astronomy geek or anything like that. I didn't anticipate going to NASA, but I liked all the sciences. I thought they were all interesting.
And how about the educational background? What kind of educational background do you need to become a science journalist?
Well, I think for journalists, you don't need a specific educational background. I think a diversity of backgrounds makes journalism really strong. So I actually got a bachelor's degree in political science and a minor in environmental science. And then I went to grad school and got a master's degree in communications.
And then how did you wind up at NASA JPL?
Well, actually, it was through going to University of Florida for my master's degree. There was a woman there, a teacher, who had a connection with NASA, and they had an internship program with the Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. And I applied for the internship and got it and got to spend about 8 months out there. And just, I didn't know that much about NASA or space science, and I learned a lot. And ever since then, I've done work for NASA, and I've also done work in just regular journalism. So I've kind of bounced back and forth.
And tell us about how do you apply to become a science journalist working for NASA? How does that work?
Well, you know, they hire in their communications departments all the time. So they post to the job boards, just like everybody else. They look for people. They prefer people, of course, to have a science background, but they also take people who don't. There are a couple of science journalists who work in the communications department here at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory who hadn't reported on science before they came here.
And just based on my experiences with them over a decade now, they're really just amazing people. The variety of stories they have to cover and the interviews they set up, it's a cool job.
Yeah, it is a cool job. It's a cool place. I don't know if you've ever been to JPL before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah, it's like I said in the podcast, I think it's like a little town. You know, they have their own fire department. They've got just all sorts of people. It's not just scientists and engineers, actually. There are people who are accountants. There are, you know, janitors. You have to have them all to support the community, right? But everybody here is really proud of what they do and very passionate about what they do. And they do some really cool things.
Yeah. To me, of all the places you could work on the planet, I really can't think of a cooler place than the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Yeah, it's funny. They have an open house every year, and it's really amazing to see the public come here and just get really excited about all the things we do. And also, they put, for the open house, they put displays all over the lab And so you get to see, oh gosh, we do that here? You know, like, I didn't realize we did that here. So there's just, it's amazing the diversity of projects that they work on here.
Oh, it is. Everything from the environment and studying the Earth's oceans and atmosphere to exploring, of course, Mars and the planets to the most distant galaxies in the universe.
That's right. It's everything from Earth. And there are a lot of Earth missions at JPL, just kind of monitoring the health of our planet and seeing its changes and trying to understand that. And also, you know, there's a group that just focuses on the universe. There's a group here that focuses on the question of dark matter and dark energy. What is that? So it's really from the smallest scale to the largest.
Yeah, it's amazing. And like I said, it's like a small town. They're nestled into the foothills below the San Gabriel Mountains there in Pasadena.
That's right. And we also are very proud of our deer that come to JPL. We call them like the Rocketeers. They come from the mountains, and we have lots of deer all over the lab, other wildlife. It's a really beautiful place.
Well, I have them too where I live, and they're more of a nuisance here where they eat my roses.
It depends on your point of view, right? We appreciate them here at JPL because we don't mind them eating all the plants. But I'm sure if you had a garden, it would bother you.
Yeah, they're kind of a nuisance. And then every morning on my way to work, it's just that constant worry that baby deer is going to jump out in front of you.
Right, that's true.
Okay, well, let's talk about the podcast, On a Mission. Nat, was this something that you proposed or that they wanted to do and then you applied for? How did that work out where you became the person behind the podcast, On a Mission?
Well, I came to JPL to work in their communications department to do internal communications, which is basically reporting to the community about things. And when I came here, I actually came from New York City, and I was working as a podcast producer out there. And I saw that JPL didn't really have a podcast, and so I did propose to put together a podcast. And there are a couple different proposals, a couple different ideas. There's actually a big group of people here who really wanted to do a podcast, and we all met and talked about what could it be, what should we do. And so it wasn't just me. There were a lot of people involved.
And then how did you, your team, whoever, settle on podcasting about the InSight mission?
Well, we proposed several. That was one of the proposals, was like, we think it should be this kind of podcast and tell these kind of stories, and here are some possible missions that we could cover. And so InSight was there, and it was just thought, you know what, it's going to be landing soon. That's pretty exciting. Maybe we could make the podcast follow along as it's flying toward Mars. And then the end of the podcast is when it arrives, landing day on Mars.
And that's coming up here later in November, right?
November 26th, Monday after Thanksgiving.
So how many episodes have you produced so far?
Well, there will be 8 episodes in total. I have them scripted. I do not have them finished. So it will be a race for me as well as InSight heads for Mars.
And so I've listened to the first couple episodes, and I love them. They're really great. When you're producing a podcast like that, it's very different from what I do, which is, mine is a more of an interview program. I like to think of what we do as kind of like Terry Gross meets Science Friday here. But what you're doing, you're telling stories more in line with, you know, perhaps something like This American Life or a podcast like, or a program like that. How did you decide to go about, like, to format this? Was there an idea that you had, this is the way I want to approach this?
Yeah, it was really my personal preference to do it this way, because I'd worked on sort of a Q&A style podcast before. I noticed that NASA does have other podcasts, and they are all also mostly Q&A. And my favorite podcasts are narrative storytelling podcasts. And so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to give NASA something it didn't have. And I thought it was really the most compelling way to tell any story. And everyone seemed to agree with me, because we all love the same podcast here. And, you know, yeah, This American Life was an inspiration. Serial, of course.
And so kind of give us a sense of how you go about putting together, like tell us about your first episode. How did you go about putting that together and storyboarding it? And what went into producing that first episode that we're going to listen to?
When I was thinking about the first episode, I wanted to set up Mars as a character in a way, because I feel like we talk about Mars, but we don't really know Mars. And that's why we go there, right? We don't really know Mars. And so I did some research. I talked to people about Mars missions in the past. And I just was really surprised at how hard it was to go there. You know, less than half of the missions that have ever tried to go to Mars have actually made it successfully. And so I don't think that's something that's really known. It's known, but it's not discussed, right? And yeah. I wanted people to feel the sort of visceral danger and almost fear that you have to send a mission to this very alien place where the risks are so high.
Yeah, because you know, in the past, we've had these incredible successes with Spirit and Opportunity, you know, and the Curiosity rover, and they always call it, you know, the 7 minutes of terror, the entry, descent, and landing, EDL, and it really is, you know, everything's got to work so perfectly, and of course, as you mentioned, and you bring out in the first episode, you know, more than half the time it doesn't.
Right. That's right. I mean, I think somebody once told me 77 things rockets have to fire in perfect unison. And if one of them goes wrong, the whole mission fails. You know, it's just an incredibly complex bit of engineering on a world that we don't really know that well. I mean, we've been going there for a while now. And our more modern efforts have definitely been more successful than the earlier ones as we learn more and more about how to do this. But it's always a risk. I don't think currently in space travel you can ever get rid of the risk.
Well, in your podcast, what you do is you tell this wonderful narrative story, and it's really well told and very entertaining. And I know we're all going to enjoy listening to it. And then you also talk to some of the people behind the scenes and tell us a bit about, you know, what that's like to get to know these people who are, you know, their lives are completely intertwined with this mission.
That's right. And actually, as the season progresses, I alternate between telling stories about the mission and telling stories about the people. So part of that getting to know people is just going to talk to them. I mean, that's one of the benefits of sort of being embedded here at JPL is I can just be like, hey, can you meet me for a coffee? I want to talk to you. And they're right there, right? And I've just been really amazed at the life stories of some of the people I've talked to and their willingness to open up about that and how dedicated they are to what they do and passionate about it. It's really inspirational to me.
You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Shlom. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Leslie Mullen, creator of the new podcast, On a Mission, that chronicles the InSight lander on Mars. Later on, we'll hear the first episode of the podcast titled The Danger of Going to Mars. Stay with us. And we're back. Let's continue our interview with Leslie Mullen. She's the creator of the new NASA podcast, On a Mission, about the InSight lander on Mars. could you briefly tell us about somebody you found, you know, I know they're all great, but somebody that you found particularly inspiring that surprised you that their story was so interesting to you?
Sure. Episode 3 is about a woman named Marlene Martinez Sundgaard. And she had a lot of obstacles to overcome in her life. And she is so determined to achieve her dreams. And it's just really inspiring. Very inspiring.
Like what kind of obstacles?
Her obstacles have been, she is the daughter of migrant farm workers, and she worked in the fields when she was a child. And that's obviously a very challenging environment to grow up in. She lived in both the state of Washington and Mexico, went back and forth. And also she has Tourette syndrome.
Well, I imagine with the political climate in the country right now and your background with the political science, that, you know, that's really got to resonate with you.
Yeah, I think it's an important story to tell. You know, I think it's people contribute to our society in many ways.
Well, we'll definitely look forward to hearing her story. And, you know, the other thing that occurs to me is you've just gotten involved in this mission. When did you first start getting involved in this? When did you begin this journey?
I guess when I just started working on the podcast, really.
Which was when?
About 9 months ago. I tell people this podcast took 9 months from conception to delivery. So like a little baby.
Yeah. I just had my first granddaughter, so I can relate to that.
There you go.
And, you know, my point to all that was that now you are invested in this. It's going to be probably pretty exciting and stressful for you when we go through that entry, descent, and landing. Where are you going to be for that?
I will be here at JPL. I'm helping out with the Mars team to keep the websites updated and post stories so everybody can keep track of what's happening with the mission. So I will not be in mission control. That is only for those engineers and scientists, really. But I will be here at the lab.
Let's now listen to episode 1 of On a Mission, created by Leslie Mullen from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. The episode is titled, The Danger of Going to Mars.
Come with me on a mission to outer space. Our destination is the planet Mars. We have to travel over 300 million miles. That may seem like a long trip, but we'll be speeding through space at 13,000 miles an hour.
Start. 2, 1. Boost your mission.
We are receiving RP codes at this time.
0.7 meters a second.
We've acquired the ground with the radar. We are wheels down on Mars.
Oh my God.
This is amazing.
Welcome to On a Mission, a podcast of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. I'm Leslie Mullen. I'm a science journalist, and I arrived at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, also known as JPL, 2 years ago. The lab is a jumble of buildings at the foot of the San Gabriel Mountains and just down the road from Hollywood. But at JPL, they're focused on stars of a different sort. JPL is like a little town, but a town full of scientists and engineers who study the mysteries of the universe and build robots to send to outer space. In my short time here, I've discovered there are a million stories to tell. The concept of this podcast is to take a close look at a single space mission and examine it from different angles. To share the science, yes, but also the struggle and satisfaction in getting a mission off the ground. For this first season, the focus will be on the InSight mission to Mars.
Go Atlas.
Go Centaur.
Go InSight.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 0. The liftoff of the Atlas V. Launching the first interplanetary mission from the West Coast. And NASA's InSight, the first outer space robotic explorer to study the interior of Mars.
A rocket carrying the InSight mission launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California earlier this year, on May 5th. It is now on its way to Mars, due to arrive at the end of November. After it lands, the robotic suite of instruments will peek below the planet's surface, investigating the different layers that make up Mars. You may already know that Mars is the fourth planet from the Sun. Earth is the third planet from the Sun, so Mars is a little farther out than we are. On a clear night, when you can see the stars, you may have noticed one that looked a little reddish. Sunlight bouncing off the Martian red rocks makes it look just like another star. But Mars is a world, a harsh, desert, alien world. Over the years, NASA has sent many spacecraft to Mars, but it's still a mysterious place in many ways and one that we've only just begun to explore. But Mars does not welcome visitors with open arms. Many spacecraft have died trying to get there. So far, there have been 43 robotic missions sent to Mars, many from the US, but Europe and Russia and even India and China have tried to go there. The current record for Mars missions is 18 successes and 25 failures. Granted, some of those failures can't be blamed on Mars. Some missions, especially early on, came to an abrupt end due to rockets blowing up on the launch pad or not getting very far past Earth. But still, less than half of the missions ever sent to Mars have made it. The InSight mission hopes to improve the odds. Soon after InSight launched from Earth, on Mars, one of the biggest dust storms in history swirled into life.
Dust storms tend to pop up on Mars on a pretty regular basis. In fact, there's a dust storm season on Mars. In some seasons, there's small dust storms. In some seasons, there are huge dust storms. And we actually just got hit with one of the big ones.
That's Bruce Bannert, the scientist leading the InSight mission. He and the InSight team were first alerted to the storm from the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, a satellite circling Mars. A rover on the ground, named Opportunity, sent photos back to Earth of the Martian sky growing dusty and dark until the sun disappeared in the sky. The storm grew until it covered most of Mars. We don't have weather like this on Earth. Our storms are located in one place, and then they drift to another area or disperse entirely. We've never, for instance, had a hurricane in the Atlantic Ocean grow and grow until it becomes a single storm, enveloping most of the planet. But this is not the first time we've seen such a large storm on Mars. When NASA's Mariner 9 orbiter reached Mars in 1971, it saw a global dust storm that was so immense, only the tops of the tallest volcanoes could be seen peeking above the haze. The Mars Global Surveyor satellite witnessed a similar massive storm in 2001. Those orbiters saw the storms from high above. The Viking 1 lander in 1977 was the first time we got to see such a big dust storm from the ground. Because Viking was actually in the storm, it also could gauge the force of the winds, which topped 60 miles per hour. Some of you may be thinking of the movie The Martian, which saw Matt Damon's character knocked down by a raging dust storm on Mars.
1,200 kilometers in diameter, bearing 24.41 degrees.
That's tracking right towards us.
Based on current escalation, estimated force of 8,600 newtons.
What's the abort force?
7,500.
Anything more than that, and the MAF could tip.
Begin abort procedure.
Let's wait it out.
Prep emergency departure. We're scrubbed. That's an order. Visibility is almost zero. Anyone gets lost, hone into my suit's telemetry. You ready?
Ready!
Commander, are you okay?
I'm okay!
It makes for good drama, but the air is so thin on Mars, only 1% as dense as air on Earth, that even the strongest winds wouldn't knock you down. In the movie, the roaring winds that rock their spacecraft and force them to abort the mission would actually feel like a gentle breeze. To understand how such strong winds wouldn't feel strong, imagine you're at the beach. A wave comes up and knocks you down. The wave is moving slowly compared to the air, but because the water is so much more dense than the air, it doesn't take much to lift you off your feet. The opposite is what happens with the thin air of Mars. Although the winds there don't pack a punch, they are able to pick up fine dust particles and loft them high into the air,
Mars dust is extremely fine, and it's very easy to lift up in the atmosphere. And without any moisture to have the dust particles clump together, it takes a long time for it to settle out. So these dust storms tend to kick up really fast and then die off really slowly. And even after the wind's all gone, you still have a lot of dust up there, which is absorbing the sun and making it kind of dark down on the surface.
InSight has to enter the atmosphere of Mars, descend down through it, and land on the planet's surface. This is known as EDL, entry, descent, and landing. On Mars, the atmosphere is thick enough to burn you up on entry, but thin enough to make landing with a parachute extremely tricky. This is why Mars landings often include rockets firing toward the ground, so-called retro rockets, that help slow down the descent. The InSight mission is prepared to go through entry, descent, and landing for a range of conditions, including a dust storm.
Those little dust particles, when you're coming in at 15,000 miles per hour, they do act as a little bit of a sandblaster. And when we designed our spacecraft, we knew that we were coming in during dust season. So we actually added about a half an inch of extra material on the heat shield, the ablative material that actually burns off as you go into the atmosphere. The calculations and experiments that we actually did on the material indicated that, you know, that was more than enough to accommodate the extra erosion that we would experience if there was dust in the atmosphere. So even if there is still dust in the atmosphere when we land, our entry system should be perfectly happy with that kind of environment, and the parachute won't even notice it.
It can take months for dust from such a big storm to slowly settle out of the air. If there's a lot of dust in the air when InSight lands, the biggest problem for the lander will be power generation. InSight runs on solar power. Falling dust not only blocks the sunlight, it also could coat the solar panels, causing InSight to run out of energy. Opportunity rover, who got caught in the dust storm, is also solar powered. It went into hibernation soon after the dust storm appeared in order to save power. The power does more than run the rover. It keeps it warm on frigid Martian nights. Temperatures in Opportunity's neighborhood, the Martian equator, can dip down to negative 130 degrees Fahrenheit or negative 90 Celsius. Without a heater, the rover could freeze to death. It's similar to running a car in the winter so the cold doesn't sap the battery charge. The Martian cold may have been what ultimately killed Opportunity's twin rover, Spirit, back in 2010. Opportunity is currently the longest-running mission on the surface of Mars. It's been in operation for over 14 years, since 2004, and it survived a large dust storm in 2007. That storm led to 2 weeks of minimal operations, including several days with no contact from the rover, in order to save power. Opportunity has been in hibernation now since June 10th. Dust storms do heat the air up on Mars, so it's possible Opportunity wasn't fatally damaged by the cold. In September, enough dust had settled out of the atmosphere that sunlight could penetrate through the haze and recharge the solar panels. While waiting for the rover to wake up, to boost the team's morale, engineers have started each day playing a song in mission control. Wake me up before you go, go. Wake Me Up Before You Go Go by Wham is just one of many songs dedicated to the sleeping rover. Over the weeks, their themed playlist has included I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor, I Won't Back Down by Tom Petty, Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles, and Dust in the Wind by Kansas. All we are is dust in the wind. Opportunity, meanwhile, remains silent and still. Mission engineers will keep listening for the rover to phone home over the next few months. What InSight will have to struggle with when it arrives on Mars is still to be determined.
We have a lot more solar power generation capability than Opportunity, but I think that our design would be at best marginal against the darkest part of the dust storm. Once we get to Mars, if we have a dust storm like that again, it would be pretty nerve-wracking for us. Nothing lasts forever but the
earth and sky. InSight science lead Bruce Bannert has had his heart broken by Mars before. Years ago, he worked on the Mars Observer mission.
My early career, I sort of was a recluse. I'd kind of go in my office and I'd lock the door and just, you know, work on my computer and hope nobody ever bothered me. But then somebody came and said, well, we need someone to work on this space mission, or we need a scientist to help integrate this altimeter that's going to go to Mars on Mars Observer.
An altimeter is used to create elevation maps that show the heights of mountains and the depths of canyons.
This was going to be the first detailed elevation map of any planet outside the Earth, and it's something that's really critical if you want to look at what forces there are on a planetary crust. And, you know, by the time we launched, I thought, well, finally, you know, we're going to Mars and all our problems are behind us. And then we got close to Mars. We did our last sort of trajectory correction maneuver before going into Mars orbit, and we never heard from it again. Back in, you know, what was that, 93, I guess, which is when this was all happening, we didn't have the fancy displays and the animation. So when we had to turn the spacecraft to do this orbit trajectory change maneuver, you know, we slewed away from the Earth point on the radio, so we lost contact. It was supposed to fire its rockets for 40 seconds or something like that, and then turn it back around, and then we reacquired the signal. We had an old CRT monitor hooked up to the DSN data feed with the signal strength that just is a line across, sort of like one of those old oscilloscope displays. It turned away, and then so the line goes flat at zero power. Oh, at 20 minutes or 40 minutes later, it's supposed to blip back up again and show our signal line. One of the young engineers on the project was like, you know, keeping track of the time, had his pencil there on the screen, says, you know, right about here is where we ought to get it. We were kind of watching, and it kept on going flat, and I said, well, maybe we're having a little bit of trouble acquiring, and so you're just waiting for something to happen, and it's not happening, and it's not happening. And at first, there's lots of explanations why that might not be true, and then there's fewer explanations that are still consistent with it being that long, and then maybe there's one or two things that might have gone wrong that are still not fatal, but it's a slow-motion train wreck that you're getting sort of more and more of a sinking feeling and trying to stay optimistic, but, you know, there's this always a voice in the back of your mind going, oh, this isn't good. We, you know, waited to acquire the signal and it didn't show up. That flat line never did leave zero. That was a really, you know, really horrible feeling to, you know, have worked on something for 5 or 6 years and then suddenly, you know, it's all gone. And later on they found a design flaw in the propulsion system, which likely allowed the fuel to mix with the oxidizer in the wrong place and probably blow a hole in the side of the spacecraft. When Mars Observer was lost, we took sort of the same payload or part of the same payload and started a new mission with kind of the same designs but a little bit different spacecraft called Mars Global Surveyor, which launched about 4 years later. It kind of just merged from Mars Observer into Mars Global Surveyor. I ended up actually working on that project for about 20 years. And it's a great project. I mean, the MOLA maps of Mars, if you've ever seen a map that's kind of blue and orange, that's our MOLA elevation map that, you know, I played a small part in helping to create. So these are like the first really high resolution images that we had of Mars. You know, sort of started revealing, you know, the actual geology of Mars at a level that can kind of visualize as a human being and not as somebody flying, you know, in an airplane, you know, 2 miles up or something. And that's been one of the foundational data sets for Mars for understanding all kinds of things about that planet. That was an amazing project. That was so much fun.
As Bruce notes, although Mars Observer failed, the design was reused for the successful Mars Global Surveyor. Spacecraft are often made this way. InSight, for instance, is essentially using the same architecture as the Phoenix lander that made discoveries near the Martian North Pole over 10 years ago. The Phoenix lander, meanwhile, rose from the ashes of the Mars Polar Lander that crashed in 1999.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to a special episode of Blue Dot, and we're playing the first episode of the new NASA podcast On a Mission about the InSight lander mission to Mars. The episode, titled The Danger of Going to Mars, was produced by our special guest, Leslie Mullen, and focuses on the difficulty of successfully landing a probe on the red planet. InSight is scheduled to land on November 26, 2018. Stay with us. And we're back. Let's listen to the conclusion of The Danger of Going to Mars with our guest, Leslie Mullen. She produced the podcast On a Mission for NASA, which covers the InSight lander mission to Mars.
Rob Grover oversees the entry, descent, and landing procedures InSight needs to go through in order to land on Mars.
We can't really do full testing on Earth because the gravity is different, the atmosphere is different. We use simulation for making sure that we're going to be successful when we land on Mars. And we use a method called a Monte Carlo simulation, which it's named for a game of chance, which is a little bit of kind of like what EDL is. So when we run the Monte Carlo simulation, we actually land 8,000 times, and it provides us kind of statistics on how we'll perform. We randomize all the parameters that are used in modeling the landing, like the mass of the lander and how well the rocket engines are working. And for each type of atmosphere we think we're going to land in, we run a Monte Carlo. And each flight path angle or angle we're going to hit the atmosphere, we also run a Monte Carlo too. So we have actually close to it, probably 1,000 parameters. And that allows us to practice the landing under multiple conditions. We do many, many, many Monte Carlos. You know, a single landing we've run probably millions of times, probably at this point, over the 5 or so years that we've been doing this. There's a little bit of rolling the dice on EDL, but we try to account for everything we possibly can. It's a risky part of the mission, probably one of the riskiest 6.5 minutes of the mission. As EDL engineers, our job is really to try to think of every possible thing that can go wrong, everything that Mars can throw at us, and try and model that and make sure that the system will be able to handle that on landing day. InSight is the first mission to land during dust storm season, and that makes it particularly challenging because the atmosphere it affects the landing quite a bit. And with the dust storm season, we could be landing in the middle of a global dust storm, or the atmosphere could just be a regular clear atmosphere, or anywhere in between. And that makes a lot more variation that we have to account for when we're designing and executing the landing. So it makes it more challenging for InSight than past missions in that respect.
As InSight approaches Mars this November, we'll all be on the edge of our seats, watching for that signal, waiting to see if it beats the odds and survives. But InSight almost died before it even left Earth.
We had a lot of problems with InSight, and then we had to stand down from our launch in December of 2015, which was incredibly disappointing, and it was really a dark time. So it's almost Christmas, and then, you know, we had to give up, you know, suddenly on this mission.
More about that next time. If you like this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and SoundCloud, and share us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're hashtag NASA on a mission. Also check out NASA's other podcasts, Gravity Assist, Rocket Ranch, What's Up, NASA in Silicon Valley, and Houston, We Have a Podcast. They can all be found on NASA's podcast page or on most podcast platforms. We're On a Mission, a podcast of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
This is Blue Dot. I'm Dave Shlom, and we've just listened to The Danger of Going to Mars, the first episode of On a Mission, a new NASA podcast. Let's conclude our interview with its creator, science journalist Leslie Mullen.
My goal for the podcast was to reach people who are really interested and curious about science, but sometimes find that it is hard to understand or feels like it's too far removed from them. So I wanted a podcast that not only told a compelling story that you wanted to listen to and couldn't wait for the next one, but also to realize that the people who work on these missions are no different than you. And it's not unapproachable. It's really interesting and understandable and even fun and funny sometimes.
And when we think about this mission, InSight, let's talk about it just a little bit, is because it's a lander and it's meant to probe the inner secrets of Mars, studying Mars quakes so we can understand what the interior of this terrestrial planet is like. What are some of the challenges for you telling stories about that as opposed to, you know, the rovers, for example?
Yeah, I think we recently published a story on the JPL webpage about, well, I probably shouldn't say recently, right? Because this is going to be in a couple of weeks. I can just say we published a story on the JPL website talking about the fact that InSight is a lander and not a rover. So it's not going anywhere. It's basically going to squat down wherever it lands, and that's where it stays.
Yeah, and they picked a very safe place, you know, relatively flat, you know, kind of like, I think they call it the big parking lot.
That's right. They call it the parking lot. Yeah. It's flat, featureless. It's exactly what they wanted, because they're not going around like Curiosity rover or one of the Mars exploration rovers to, you know, dig in and see what, like, all these different rock layers are and that sort of thing with their drill. They want to have a quiet kind of place, because the seismometer on InSight is a very delicate instrument. And that's why they have something that they put over it. It looks like if you're going out to a fancy dinner and they put the cover on the meal, and then they brandish the cover off and there's your meal. They're doing that the opposite. They're putting the cover on the seismometer to shield it from the wind, because it's just that sensitive.
Oh, yeah. And gosh, you think about, you know, all that has to go right to land, and, you know, all the forces involved, the accelerations, that you've got this incredibly delicate instrument that has to work for this mission to be a success.
Well, it's not the only instrument, though. They do have a seismometer, and definitely hope that works, because that's really important information that they need to know. But there's also a thermal probe. It's going to dig down as far as 16 feet into Mars to try to take Mars's temperature. And there are other instruments on the actual lander as well, like a weather station and other experiments. So definitely hope the seismometer makes it, though. That's the one. It's kind of amazing that they could make this thing, and I really hope it succeeds.
So 8 episodes, right?
Right.
And how often are they going to be coming out?
Well, my current plan is to release 2 a week. So the first 2 came out October 29th, and then the next 2, November 5th. We're actually going to, so every Monday up until the 19th, and then the following Monday after that is landing day.
And once we're all hooked on these shows, like I know I'm going to be, I hope there's going to be a sequel.
Well, I do hope to do an episode a couple months later to update about the InSight science, if the mission is successful. And then, you know, season 2, the sky's the limit, or not the limit.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, this reminded me, talking to you about this, of one of my favorite TV shows of all time was The West Wing. And did you ever see the episode called Galileo?
Well, I've seen The West Wing, but you have to remind me what that episode is.
Yeah, it's about a mission to Mars that is supposed to land, and the president's all excited about sharing this mission with school children around the country. And they lose signal from it. And it's just an incredibly great story. In the long run, it's the story of, you know what, when things don't work out, it's what you learn from them and move on. It's the big picture. But it made me think of how difficult it really is to land a vehicle on Mars. So I'm wishing everybody down there with InSight, and you included, the best of luck with the landing.
Well, thank you very much. I hope you'll be watching on landing day.
Oh, certainly. And are they calling it 7 minutes of terror? Or do they have any kind of cool name for this one?
Well, for InSight, it's actually 6.5 minutes of terror, which isn't as snazzy sounding as 7 minutes of terror. But they do refer to it as 6.5 minutes of terror. It has a different sort of landing trajectory. So Curiosity rover was the 7 minutes of terror. That landed with a sky crane system, with that very complicated thing that I was amazed worked. But InSight, because it's smaller and it's a lander and it has just different specifications, it's got more of a traditional kind of landing, more like how Phoenix lander landed.
Yeah.
So how it enters the...
With retro rockets and, you know, the kind of the classic landing profile with the rockets firing and it lowering itself to the surface on the landing pads. Well, best of luck with the podcast, and thank you so much for sharing episode 1 with us.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me to your show. It's really been great talking with you.
Sure, and I hope to have you back again in a few months to talk about, you know, the series as a whole, and hope you go forward with these, because I really do think these are really wonderful to listen to, and I hope you'll be able to do more podcasts for NASA JPL.
Thank you. I do as well.
All right, Leslie, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
finally, as we learned in the On a Mission podcast from Leslie Mullen and her guests, getting to Mars is hard. One of my favorite examples of this in pop culture is an episode of The West Wing from 2000 called Galileo 5. In it, President Bartlett, played by the incomparable Martin Sheen, who's very smart, well-read, and eloquent, is looking forward to sharing a NASA unmanned mission to Mars with school kids across the country. Here's the president in the opening talking to his press secretary, C.J. Craig, wonderfully played by Allison Janney, as they discuss the mission's upcoming landing.
Galileo 5.
Yes, sir.
Just the name.
Galileo 5.
You can feel the adventure.
Yes, indeed.
NASA's great at naming things.
They are.
Mercury, Apollo, Atlantis, the Sea of Tranquility, the Ocean of Storms.
Good names.
First time I heard Galileo 5, the way the imagination immediately, it reminded me of the way folks in my generation felt when we heard Yellow Submarine.
Okay.
We really did all want to live in a yellow submarine.
I can't believe they gave you people driver's licenses.
Tell me where we're going again.
Mars briefing rehearsal.
Why?
To rehearse.
Say the name.
I said the name.
Say it again. Your imagination, like a child, will explode with unrestrained possibilities for adventure.
Galileo 5.
You didn't say it right.
I said it fine.
Ah, President Bartlett, and the wonderful dialogue written by Aaron Sorkin. But to be accurate, NASA didn't name the Sea of Tranquility. But I digress.
On these monitors, you'll be seeing the images beamed back from the surface. And on this computer screen, you'll be able to read the questions being sent in by the kids. I strongly urge you, Mr. President, to act as moderator and pass the questions off to one of the experts on the panel rather than answer it yourself.
Yes.
Would you like to see some of the questions?
We have questions in advance.
Some of them. Would you put them up?
Sure. Katie, sixth grader, Green Oaks, Junior High School, Austin, Texas, asked, how old is the planet Mars? That's a great question, Katie. The planet Mars is 4.6 billion years old.
What did I just say?
I knew that one.
Nobody likes a know-it-all.
Yes, God forbid that while talking to 60,000 public school students, the president should appear smart.
That's fine, just don't show off.
I don't show off. Stevie, fourth grader, PS 31, Manhattan, asked, what is the temperature on Mars? Well, Stevie, if one of our expert panelists were here, they would tell you the average temperature ranges from 15 degrees to minus 140.
That happens to be wrong. It ranges from 60 to minus 225.
I converted it to Celsius in my head.
Thank you.
Now, CJ is telling the president about what his role is in the televised classroom. And you get a sense of how smart a guy Bartlett is. And then there's the matter of a speech written for him by a poor NASA public information guy that makes quite a few rookie mistakes. I think he needed Grammarly. None of the NASA PIOs I've ever dealt with would write that poorly, but it makes for a better story as it is. To the rescue comes Sam Seaborn, presidential speechwriter, played by Rob Lowe.
Can I see the intro?
It's up on the prompter.
Ah, good morning. I'm speaking to you live from the West Wing of the White House. Today, we have a very unique opportunity to take part live in an extremely historic event Whoa, boy.
How you doing, Mr. President?
Who wrote this intro?
I did, sir. I'm Scott Tate from NASA Public Affairs.
Scott, unique means one of a kind. Something can't be very unique, nor can it be extremely historic.
While we're at it, do we have to use the word live twice in the first two sentences like we just cracked the technology?
Look,
we're also broadcasting in living color, right?
Sam?
Yeah.
He's going to make some changes.
You going to clear him with me?
I doubt it. Write this. Good morning. 11 months ago, a 1,200-pound spacecraft blasted off from Cape Canaveral, Florida. 18 hours ago, is it 18 hours ago? We're on the air at noon Eastern.
Yeah.
18 hours ago, it landed on the planet Mars. You, me, and 60,000 of your fellow students across the country, along with astroscientists and engineers from the Jet Propulsion Lab in Southern California, NASA Houston, and right here at the White House, we're going to be the first to see what it sees and to chronicle the extraordinary voyage of an unmanned ship called Galileo 5.
He said it right.
Well, unfortunately, NASA loses contact with Galileo 5. The story's loosely based on the Mars Polar Lander mission. It, too, was lost just months before this episode aired. Later on in the show, we hear Rob Lowe's Sam talking to Mallory, daughter of the chief of staff, in front of the Kennedy Center in a stirring speech about the need to explore. And too bad this is radio, because Rob Lowe never looked more handsome than he did in this scene wearing a tuxedo.
I spoke to my dad. I'm sorry about Galileo.
We've got a lot of tests that can still try.
How much money is it going to cost to try it?
Don't start with me.
I'm asking as a taxpayer. It costs $165 million to lose the thing. How much more money is it going to cost to make sure you're never going to find it?
I don't know, Mallory, but we certainly won't divert any municipal tax dollars, which are always best spent on new hockey arenas.
No, it's best spent feeding and housing and educating people.
There are a lot of hungry people in the world, Mal, and none of them are hungry because we went to the moon. None of them are colder, and certainly none of them are dumber because we went to the moon.
And we went to the moon. Do we really have to go to Mars?
Yes.
Why?
Because it's next. Because we came out of the cave, and we looked over the hill, and we saw fire. And we crossed the ocean, and we pioneered the West, and we took to the sky. The history of man is hung on a timeline of exploration, and this is what's next.
I know.
People like you who say that... What?
I said, I know. We're supposed to be explorers.
Finally, after all is lost with Galileo 5, and Sheen's President Bartlett is kind of depressed about not being able to share the adventure with school kids across the country, here comes Allison Janney's CJ character to the rescue.
Mr. President, about the televised classroom tomorrow?
I'm going to wait up for a while and see if we hear anything. It's out there somewhere. It's so close.
I think you should do the classroom either way.
Yeah?
We have at our disposal a captive audience of school children. Some of them don't go to the blackboard or raise their hand because they think they're going to be wrong. I think you should say to these kids, you think you get it wrong sometimes, you should come down here and see how the big boys do it. I think you should tell them you haven't given up hope and that it may turn up, but in the meantime, you want NASA to put its best people in the room and you want them to start building Galileo 6. Some of them will laugh and most of them won't care, but for some, they might honestly see that it's about going to the blackboard and raising your hand. And that's the broader theme.
I'll see.
I'll be in my office, Mr. President.
CJ.
Yes, sir.
You said it right that time.
Aw, residents of the White House that are filled with character and eloquence. I guess that's why they call it Hollywood. Thanks again to our guest, science journalist and podcast creator, Leslie Mullett from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. You can link to the On a Mission podcast on our website and check out this and past episodes of Blue Dot at mynsbr.org. Blue Dot is produced by North State Public Radio in Northern California. You can subscribe to us on NPR Podcasts. Our theme music is by Matt Schultz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by Sky Schofield. Finally, I want to take a moment to recognize the pain and suffering of our friends, family, and neighbors here devastated by the worst wildfire in California history that destroyed my hometown of Paradise. Stay strong, and as always, for all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.